You've adopted a theme for this year, the family looks at the future. Somebody said that's about the only place you can look, because if you look at the past, you get discouraged. I'll give you men a hint. I've said it these many years. If you have the good fortune to pick a good wife, she brings up the family and she does all the work, and then the man goes out and brags about it. It's a man's world, after all. I'm happy that you've chosen this theme because it's so wonderful. It's the foundation of civilization. As long as there are good homes, there'll be good countries. But if the home ever cracks up, civilization will have been yesterday. I've been turning over since this assignment came to me the things that seem to make for happy homes. And I come from an inspiration of yesterday that I cannot forget. Families build ideals into their homes. They live by them. Yesterday and today, we are sending out 304 missionaries. In 1 week, 304 go out. And among those it was my privilege to set apart yesterday was a young Mexican lad. And as he came forward, I asked him who was with him. And I said, "Your father here?" And he said, "No, sir." "Your mother here?" "No, sir." "You have any of your folk here?" And he said, "Yes. My aunt is here, and these two girls are my cousins." And then he told me the facts. I put a lump in my throat. I was hardly able to give him a blessing. He said, "A month ago, my father was killed in an automobile accident, from which my mother is still in the hospital recovering. And no member of my immediate family is well enough to be here." And I said, "You're still going on a mission?" "Yes," he said, "my mother wants me to go." There are wonderful people in this world. And those wonderful people are built in homes. I read a line as I was thinking of this yesterday. After countless failures to find shortcuts, the road to civilization still starts in the home and runs through the school and the church. How eminently true that is. We travel a very great deal, and we always wish we could call in the homes we pass. Roughly, there are 48 million homes in America. Wouldn't you like to drop in and take a look at each one of them? They run all the way from shacks to palaces, and they have a spirit in them all the way from hatred and animosity up to the kindliest of affection. But on the whole, the homes of America are wonderful. And so are the young people. I've been saying it a good bit of late. We talk about these wild young people, the teenagers. The young people of Chicago have made a study, and the results are fascinating to me. They say they'd been slandered long enough. The newspaper each morning comes out with a headline, "These wild young people." And so they went to the police records in Chicago, and they discovered that all the young people that are brought before the courts constitute only 3% of the available number, and that the 97% are just like your sons and daughters. And they said, "We resent just a little bit having played up all the time the 3% who kick over, and so little is ever said." And they made this rather telling remark: "We're gathered here in an assembly to dedicate ourselves to the improvement of youth, but," they said, "there won't be any picture of this convention, and none of us will make the headlines. If they give us a little bit of note, they will say, 2,000 young folk gathered in a certain assembly hall in Chicago. But tomorrow morning, if one of them goes out and gets drunk, or one of them has an automobile accident or breaks up something, they'll throw him into the headlines. Let's be sure we keep our sense of values. Now this morning, I want to try to develop with you a little theme that's dear to my heart. We've cherished certain ideals. We've been away to school 4 times. We first went on our honeymoon, and the last time we went with 4 children and came home with 5. We've been broke or near it much of our life. This good companion of mine says, I'd rather put up with little now if someday you'll amount to something. Bless her heart, I'd love to. But we've had tremendous living in our home, and for that I'm grateful. We dreamed dreams that the 5 children that were granted to us, we'd one day see through college. We knew we were never going to have a lot of money, but we'd give them the foundation, we'd give them the training, we'd give them what nobody could ever take away from them. We're happy now that we have 5 children, all college graduates, and they've now blessed us with 21 grandchildren. There have been some great men in America, and I love to read of their greatness. And I think one of the most outstanding ones of all of them was George Herbert Palmer, who was a teacher in Harvard University. To anybody who aspires to teach, and that means all parents, I wish they could all read his little book, The Ideal Teacher. It's one of the best things that's ever been written, in my judgment, in that field. You're taking home names of good books you want to read. Take that one home, will you? Palmer's The Ideal Teacher. And whether you're professionally teaching or teaching in the home, you'll love it. He wrote another little book that he called Altruism. That's one of the most thought-provoking books I know. He said, as we get along with other people, and I was impressed this morning that we have some difficulties, I hope I sound differently from the way you sounded when you... We had such a hard time to locate the ents. And that 52... sounded so odd. I wonder, do we sound that way to you out there? It's so hard to communicate ourselves one to another. J. Golden Kimball said the hardest job he had all in his life was trying to convince the brethren he didn't say it. I wish while I talk I could sit out there and see how it sounds. I don't know what it's doing to you. I liked your chairman's thought. Don't get too exercised while you're here. I think he pretty nearly invited you to take a little nap. It's all right if you'll do it quietly. George Herbert Palmer says it's one of the toughest things in all the world to get on common footing. And he said we've done it on 5 levels. First is the level of manners. And he loves that. He said there's some things you won't do when you sit down at the table. You know, you don't say, shove me the spuds. You'd get the same answer as if you said, will you kindly pass the potatoes? But we just don't do it, and you don't reach over. I mean, there's a limit to the reach. That could be good sense, you know. But we don't do it. We have certain manners. Then he said we have gifts. And it's so interesting to develop the thought of gifts. What do you give to your friends? He says the best thing to give is part of yourself. Next to that, give what you'd love to have somebody give to you. You'll want to read the chapter. Then he said there's that thing called partnership. And that's wonderful, where you strike hands and you say you'll go together. And the next one is love. When you give your hearts to somebody. Then he gets on to another level that's the level I want to visit with you for a few minutes this morning. And he calls it the level of mutuality. And if I could translate that, that's the golden rule set in one word. Do unto others as you'd have others do unto you. Or if you want to read it in the gospel, it's even more elaborate than that. Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. You put it into one word, it's mutuality. And I think it's one of the richest words in the language. And I want to play on that word just a little bit with you in this matter of looking at the home of tomorrow. Families, I've discovered, live on one of three levels. The lowest one is the level of collision. I spent yesterday afternoon trying to straighten out a couple that have been colliding ever since they were married. They find out what they don't like in each other and they parade it. That's such a stupid thing. I said, look, you must have loved each other once, didn't you? And he said, uh-huh. He talks that kind of language. Uh-huh. I guess everybody understands that. I tried to find something he didn't agree with, and I finally didn't. He said, nope. I don't mean that everybody that says nope and uh-huh lives on a level of collision, but you remember that mother who said, go see what Jimmy's doing and tell him to quit? There are families that live in an atmosphere of everlasting don'ts and mustn'ts. You do that again, you know. You do that again and wait till your father comes home. There are families that live in that atmosphere. Sad, but it's true. Then there's the family that lives on the level of indifference. Nobody cares about anybody else. I often think of the fellow that his wife prepared him a wonderful dinner. She really took pains. And she hoped that he'd say just a word about it when he came in and sat down at the table. He came in and sat down at the table and never a word. And when the meal was over, she kind of broke into. Said, you don't know how long it took me to make that cake. And then he used that expressive remark. I ate it, didn't I? I ate it. Never a word, never a thank you. Total indifference. You go your way, I go mine. Never the twain shall meet. There are families like that. And then there are those families that reach the heights of camaraderie. One day when you get home, take the dictionary and see what a comrade is. It's wonderful to live in a spirit of camaraderie in your home, where you join hands together and you become one. Scripture says that's what we're to do. I marry a good number of people, especially this month. June's the month of weddings, certainly. And as you see two lovely young people kneel at the altar, you just say to them, look, you've been talking up in terms of I and me and mine. From today on, won't you talk in terms of we and us and ours? It's a new day, it's a new life, and a home exists that two people shall become amalgamated and thereafter be one. And it's on that level that I bring you this thought. 30 years ago, there sat in our home and gave us one of the rarest evenings we've ever enjoyed the author of these lines. I'm sorry in a way that he's undertaken to write a poem each day. I have a sort of conviction that you don't write poetry that way. But once or twice in his life, I think this man has reached the heights. And we... Doesn't mean anything. To those aesthetic souls who like their poetry to be highly intellectual, They'll say, Brother Bunyan doesn't stoop to this level, does he? But this is one of the poems that has always touched my heart. And I think maybe so because Edgar Guest sat in the chair I like to call mine. You come into my home, you'll discover there's one chair you better not sit in. That's a rocker. I'll skip it. But it's a wonderful chair. And we let him have it. And he recited, among other things, this for us. Because we'd asked him what lay behind that poem. And he says, our whole life is in that poem. It takes a heap of living in a house to make a home. Some of you know it. It takes a heap of living in a house to make a home. A heap of sun and shadow, and you sometimes have to roam before you really appreciate the things you left behind and hunger for them somehow with them always on your mind. It don't make any difference how rich you get to be, how much your chairs and tables cost, how great your luxury. It ain't home to you, though it be the palace of a king, until somehow your soul is sort of wrapped round everything. Home ain't a place that gold can buy or get up in a minute. Afore it's home, there's got to be a heap of living in it. Within the walls, there's got to be some babies born. And then right there, you've got to bring them up. You remember the scripture? Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. When you talk about a home, you talk about the people who are in it. And you got to bring them up to women and good and men. And gradually, as time goes on, you find you wouldn't part with anything they ever used. They've grown into your heart. The old high chairs, the playthings too, the little shoes they wore, ye hoard, and if you could, you'd keep the thumb marks on the door. If you come into our home, you'd see that some of our Circassian walnut corners are all edged. They were edged by our first boy, who used to cut the corners a little too close when he rode from one room into the other on his trike. We've often said for appearances we ought to have the wood replaced, but not while we live, because there's a little bit of bud in every chip that's off the wood. And I wouldn't change it. I won't read you the rest of it tonight before you call it a day. You turn to it. I want to give you three or four constructive thoughts, if I can, on this thought of mutuality. Mutuality is where you share in common. Mutuality is where there's a togetherness in the house. I used to wonder about that word, but I discover it's a perfectly good one. It's approved in Webster. Togetherness. And nothing else quite says it. It's when you join hands and hearts. You're mutually concerned. It's a rich word. Now let me apply it just for a few minutes as we come to the end of this short hour. It's there in work. There is mutuality in the work of the home. And I wish I could say it to you. You wonderful mothers, often in the kindness of your souls, you want to spare those lovely daughters. And so you become the workhorse, and the girls sit around and take it for granted. The kindest thing you'll ever do to a girl is to train her in the artistry that makes you so wonderful. I used to teach a little music, and I can see them coming now, and the mother would say, we'll take care of the girl's hands so they'll be supple, you know. Is it supple or subtle? I don't care. Okay. And so they'd say to her, she mustn't get her hands in the hot dishwater. Oh, I used to say to the mothers, you don't worry about the water. You let her get music in her soul, and somehow it'll come out of the fingers. I think it's a wonderful thing to train a young man once in a while that he hits the dignity. Sometimes a college boy says he can't get on the floor and scrub, you know, but he can stand there and watch his mother. That's a great collegiate achievement. I wish I could say it so. One day somebody would feel the urge. We lived with a kind of tradition in our family. I said I hoped the boys would all be gracious enough before they left the house that they'd one day wash the car when they didn't get paid for it and when they didn't have a date. We had a second boy that was an athlete. I'd like to count the number of times his mother told him to pick up his clothes. He had that gracious, athletic disposition. When he came in, he found the nearest spot and hurled him. It was part of his training, I think. It's a wonderful thing to train a boy that when he takes them off, he puts them away. The work can be relieved. I'll let you in on a secret. Soon after, when we were first married, I used to help in the kitchen. I dried the dishes. But as the children came along, I said I didn't want to be unfair to them. So I retired. Now the children are all gone, and I'm back at my old calling. And I make only one request. Sister Benyon works fast. She had to learn to do it with five of them. But I like to poke along in the kitchen, and some of this comes out of the kitchen. Maybe you think it shows it. If I can get a dish in my hands, you know, and just putter over it, I can generate sometimes a couple of ideas. But I don't want to be hurried. If you've never... I'll drop it. I'm going to get into difficulty. I offer you the suggestion that this mutuality expresses itself first in work. The garden's to be kept up. The flowers are to be tended. A rose develops beautifully, but it needs to be nurtured. And it shouldn't all be left to the woman, though I risk the judgment that most of the beautiful gardens in this and the other valleys of the state are feminine made. Well, there's so many things you can find to do. I want to name the second thing in which mutuality plays its part. And I call it the fun of the home, or joy. And I want to give you a homely illustration that I just ran into down in Arizona. One of the best I've ever seen. So many of us, when we take the children someplace, we get the children in the car and we put them in the back seat and now say, in heaven's name, keep quiet. And to the extent that a man can, from his attention to the wheel, he's disciplining much of the time, and he's always shouting, do be quiet, don't do that, keep away from the window, don't get your feet on the... Okay. I found a family that's found the answer. I give you two thoughts. They play the alphabetic game, and they say, let's see how far we have to go before we can get all the letters in the alphabet from the signs along the road. If you haven't tried it, it's fun. You're going to have a lot of trouble with the Q's and the V's and the X's. You haven't tried it, try it. And the children will watch for them. We used to watch for white horses. Now we watch for yellow tractors. But there's something out there to watch for, and you can have fun. You can play the game. There are so many things along the way. Instead of wrangling in the back seat, this family had their three cards for copywork, for drawing, and the youngsters were happy and delighted. I remember the days our children were young and there came out from England and other places the wonderful moron stories. I think we collected all of them. You're going to have fun in a house. And as you gather around, it's a wonderful thing to have that fun. I've run you to the end of the hour. I want to name just these other three things. enjoy mutuality in culture, in the reading, in the music, in the art. Let the children help you to pick the things that come into the home. If they want Elvis Presley, put up with a little of Elvis, and then lead them to something that's better, and let them help you to find the better. Do I make my point? Elvis doesn't upset me too much. I married into a family that used to make a feature of the Uncle Remus stories, and I cherish them to this day. I can remember the Mark Twain story where the corpse was mistaken for a brand of cheese that was being taken on the train. If you've never read it, you ought to. Elbert Hubbard, the great book Little... Well, what are the best things of all time? Why don't you talk them over with your children and help let them help you to decide? I give you the fourth thing. Namely, be sure you set up a pattern of affection in mutual terms, mutual kindness. I want to tell you there ought to echo through a happy home. Excuse me, please. Thank you, sir. Let me help you. I told this young couple there are wonderful things in all of us. And if you put a premium on the wonderful things and talk about them, you won't have time for those others. And finally, we had a delightful morning the other morning. They brought back down home three of our little grandchildren to have breakfast with Pop. I'm Pop to the grandchildren, and I love it. We sat up at the breakfast table, and I said, could one of you ask the blessing? And a little three-year-old put up her hand and said, could she ask it? I said, you surely can. It wasn't learned by rote. It wasn't a formula out of a book. And when she got through, her little six-year-old sister said, Pop, could you let me say one too? Bless their hearts. They've learned to pray. I bless their primary teacher and their Sunday school teacher and their father and mother. They prayed out of their hearts. And our day was a wonderful day. I suggest that in this spirit of mutuality, you pray mutually. Don't let the father do all the praying. And the mother shouldn't do it all. The children will pray with you and for you from the time they're two. You're gracious. God bless you to understand what it means to live mutually. And in that mutuality, may you find the joy that belongs in a home. I pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.